Hey everybody, Rob Mauer here, and today we've got some new details on the Cybertruck. We've also got some reporting on a possible expansion for Giga Shanghai for Tesla in China, some updates on the strike in Sweden, and a few other items as well. All right, looking at the stock, Tesla today up about 0.25% to $239.37. The NASDAQ down about 0.6%, so a really nice day for Tesla given the broader markets. And excitingly, we do have quite a few more details on the Cybertruck today. Seems like more people are starting to be invited to place their orders, confirm their orders for the Cybertruck. So there have been a couple of posts on this on various places throughout the day. One here from Roberto Aguilar, I believe is a Tesla employee, but says, I'm one of the lucky ones to get a Foundation Edition. Here's proof. And then we've got a couple of screenshots, including a short little video there of the order screen. So you can see this does run for the Tri-Motor Cyber Beast version after destination fee, order fees, all these sort of things, up to $122,000 for this, you know, initial Foundation Series version. In the email here, it does say that it's fully optioned, including the limited edition laser etched badging, which I think we have highlighted on the podcast, but perhaps not. Just the three-headed sort of cyber beast on the back there. Charging equipment with PowerShare home backup. I think it includes the universal wall connector and things like that. So fully optioned, $122,000. Of course, that will change over time as those options become actual options, optionally, in the future. So Drive Tesla Canada, they got some more information from one of their readers, recapped it nicely here. They say that the Foundation Series, so this, you know, Foundation Series in general, I guess to start off, would be pretty comparable to what we've seen in the past from Tesla with the Founder Series versions or, you know, sort of Signature Edition vehicles. A little bit different in this case, but sort of a similar concept with these first initial vehicles being those fully optioned vehicles. Of course, that's going to help Tesla's margins initially as they work through the first part of the ramp. So they say Foundation Series customers can order both the dual-motor all-wheel drive Cybertruck or the tri-motor Cyberbeast, $120,000 for the Cyberbeast before the destination fee. All-wheel drive version, also $20,000 more expensive, just under $100,000. They say that deliveries for the Cybertruck all-wheel drive have an estimated delivery window of December to March. So it's kind of exciting to see that more deliveries will be taking place this month. And then of course through Q1, and they say the Cyberbeast is estimated for early 2024. So I don't know of the vehicles that they delivered on, you know, last week was what the mix of those was, whether it was all wheel drive or Cyberbeasts or a little bit of both, but at least for now, they are seemingly starting with the all wheel drive version, adding the tri-motor version just a little bit later. They do also note that the initial configuration does have the all-season tires as opposed to, it does have the all-terrain tires as opposed to the all-season tires. So the range is a little bit higher with those all-season tires, which will come a little bit later in 2024. Those give you the 340 or the 320 mile ranges on the all-wheel drive and the Cyberbeast version respectively. With the all-terrain tires that are shipping right now, as we see, you know, different configurations from Tesla and other vehicles. Similar thing here with the Cybertruck, that drops the range to 318 miles for the all-wheel drive version, 301 miles for the Cyberbeast. Now, of course, you can always change your tires later and, you know, sort of recover that range. It's not necessarily lost or anything like that, but different tires and things like that will, of course, affect range. For the range extender, they do say it is $16,000, as we had previously talked about, that had shown up in some of the source code on Tesla's site. So it looks like that is now confirmed. Right now, it's just a $500 deposit, essentially, which will move you to the front of the line for installation. So this isn't something that is factory installed off the line, but would come later. They say that production on the range extender won't begin until late 2024. So we'll have to wait about a year or so, maybe a little bit less than that, for those range extenders to come out. Now, I'm sure Tesla will kind of gauge the interest on that over that period of time, too. I wouldn't be completely shocked if this didn't end up shipping. I still think the odds are strongly in favor that it will, but Tesla will evaluate it and see what the interest is and make that decision at that time. So very interesting details here. Happy to get a little bit more. Here are the list of options that come with this. So you've got laser badging, FSD is included, so that takes up a big chunk of that, you know, $20,000 premium. Lifetime premium connectivity, wall connector, power share. I'm not sure if this will be a cost option that needs to be added or if they're just mentioning that it's included. Apparently we'll have the light bar that we've talked about. We don't know the details on that, unfortunately, yet. And then just some of the things that are in the sort of the merchandise sort of category in the shop, floor mats, dividers for the sort of rear trunk, you know, I guess the trunk in the bed is maybe a good way to put that space there. Sunshade, D-rings, etc. Some of the attachable accessories there. So good to have a little bit more detail on this, on the Cybertruck, and good to see just in general more people being invited to order, with some people getting those December potential deliveries. Of course, that contingent on production, but you know, good to see that expansion. Now, although Roberto here is seemingly an employee, my understanding is that there were non-employees that took delivery at the event. So I've seen some people questioning, you know, if Tesla's going to limit it to employees for the sake of somehow not recognizing that in the financials. I'm not really sure where that train of thought comes from. If you look back at the Model 3 ramp up, they actually did start with employees first. I think that was more of a just initial, you know, test production type of thing, where they're trying to make sure that they have all the issues sorted out before going out to third parties. I don't think that was margin related, because if you actually look at that, margin dropped like 10 points the first quarter that Tesla started delivering the Model 3 because of the Model 3, even though those were only being delivered to employees. So I've seen that train of thought out there. It's not one that I think has much basis in Tesla's history. Now, things could change, of course, but it's just not something that I've really seen as a relevant point here. So I do think that they're going to non-employees, but obviously we'll just have to kind of wait and see how that unfolds. Always good to see more people getting invited, though. We also happen to see someone spotted on Facebook, Jay Leno, out driving around a Cybertruck. He said it is VIN number 5, not his truck, but he said a friend is letting him drive it right now. He says it's incredible. Just a short clip there, but just kind of fun to see these, you know, starting to show up out in the wild, being driven around by, you know, not necessarily regular people here with Jay Leno, but, you know, non-Tesla people. Having these out on the road is exciting. We also got a little bit more detail on some of the Cybertruck features. So Jeremiah on X here asking Elon if the truck suspension can independently adjust by wheel to potentially level the vehicle in non-level terrain, like if you're camping and, you know, you've got a little bit of a slope or something like that. And Elon said yes. You know, the suspension is individual wheel controlled, so obviously that would be possible. It's just something that Tesla would need to implement from a software perspective. I don't know if it's implemented currently or if this is just something that will be implemented over time, but good to see Elon note that that will be the case, if not already, at least at some point. And then Nick Cruz on X here pointing out, I'm not sure where this comes from, but one of the off-road modes that Tesla offers, which we have talked about before, I think the Top Gear video covered that, it does have a Wade mode included in it. So Elon at one point had said one of the aspirations for the Cybertruck was for it to be able to sort of cross a narrow strait of water. I don't think we haven't heard more about that, so that doesn't seem to be the case, but they do seem to be doing a little bit here in that direction. Wade mode apparently raises the ride height and pressurizes the battery when driving through water. I don't have a great understanding of how that process works, but from what I've read, that helps improve, you know, different electronics have different ratings for waterproofness, and I think that helps improve that rating from what I've read. So again, I don't know technically how that is done, but that would be the purpose of that pressurization. So interesting to see that. I'm sure we'll learn more about that as more people get their hands on it and start testing things out, but at least there is a little bit there with that sort of water type of features. And then we had talked before about how Tesla had allegedly sent out a little PDF of how to build a 48 volt vehicle to all other automaker CEOs and suppliers. Jim Farley today on X noting that they were not joking and that they received that document yesterday. So great to see, or they received it today, dated for yesterday. So that was actually factual information, and I'm sure all the other automakers now have that information as well. All right, moving on from the Cybertruck, we do have a report on Tesla in China. So this is from local China media. This is from latepost.com. We don't have verification of this by any means, but they are reporting that they've exclusively learned that Tesla is planning to restart the construction of the third phase of the factory in Shanghai. They say that people close to the matter say that Tesla began to prepare for this in 2021, but suspended those plans in the middle of last year. Apparently, those plans have now been sort of restarted. Bloomberg at one point earlier this year had said that the third phase of the factory was intended to roughly double the production, so up to a couple million vehicles. So it would be very exciting if this is the case. They do say that insiders speculate that this would be for future production of the, you know, lower cost next generation vehicle, which obviously makes sense if you're going to be doubling the factory capacity, that would be the case. So again, we don't have confirmation of this, but that would be very exciting if this does end up being accurate. There have been, I think, times when Tesla had these, you know, I think I probably agree with how this is being reported, that if we just kind of think about how Tesla's history with Shanghai has gone, there have been times when it seemed very aggressive and seemed like that aggression was going to continue, and then it kind of, you know, was tempered back at a certain point. Maybe those relationships are becoming a little bit better. After Xi Jinping visited San Francisco, you know, I think the very next day or within a couple of days, we heard reports that China was starting to remove some of the restrictions on Tesla vehicles in government areas. So this could be a little bit of a result of, you know, further conversations and improvement in, I guess, outlook for expansion there in China. So we'll keep an eye on it. Again, just a kind of a rumor category report at this point, but would be, I think, pretty good news in general. And, you know, we've seen what Shanghai can do in terms of timing and ramping and all those sort of things on a number of occasions now. All right, next we've got a report on the, I guess, strike efforts. I don't even know if I think I introduced it as a strike, but I'm not even sure if that's an accurate categorization of what's happening with Tesla in Sweden, because it sounds like actual Tesla workers are really not engaging in that, at least certainly not heavily, but that's upsetting the unions, which are then putting some pressure on Tesla outside of Tesla's own control in terms of not letting vehicles into the country and things like this. So apparently what's happening now is a couple other countries' unions are joining this to try to exert additional pressure and support IF Metall in Sweden. So the first one that we're hearing from here is, obviously I'm not going to be able to pronounce that, but in Norway, the largest union there in the private sector is now saying that if this isn't resolved in Sweden by December 20th, they are going to call for boycotts for basically assisting with shipping vehicles. Anything to do with Sweden that is potentially working through Norway would be part of this boycott. And then Denmark saying a very similar thing with 3F Transport, the union there, I also believe the largest union there. They say that this means that dock workers, drivers, will not receive or transport Tesla cars going into Sweden. And I also heard that I don't have this one up here, but I think one of the wealth management funds in Denmark has announced that they're going to be selling Tesla shares due to this ongoing conflict as well. So it's interesting. There's a lot of additional pressure being put on here. And I think the most interesting part of it is that it all seems to be coming externally to Tesla itself and Tesla employees. I mean, if you kind of look at the language that was used here, I don't know if I remember to highlight it or not, but they say that one of the comments that they made was that the, you know, IF Metall has the full support of this union, which does seem an accurate description of the scenario of the situation here. But really, shouldn't they be in support of the Tesla employees? And if the Tesla employees are saying that they're fine with the current situation, then shouldn't everyone be fine with the situation? You would think logically that that would follow. But I think what's happening here is that all these unions are sensing that if that is the case, then that puts pressure on their existence, right? And just pressure on, you know, their strength and their leverage in other scenarios. So it's an interesting situation. I wish I knew a little bit more about it to be able to speak more informed on it in terms of how unions are in Europe. Obviously, it's a little bit different than in the US. But nevertheless, it seems like this pressure is increasing. It'll be interesting to follow, you know, where things go from here, because Tesla definitely has a pretty firm stance on this topic. So we'll keep an eye on that, but wanted to pass those pieces of news along. We've also got an update from TeslaScope here. They had said about a day ago that the holiday release from Tesla, holiday software update, had started to roll out to employees. Tesla usually tries to do a lot of big features, or, you know, at least a number of different features in that holiday update, trying to make it a little bit special for people. So for this year, they had said yesterday that this started rolling out. They weren't going to post the release notes yet, but they have now posted those. So a number of different updates here. I don't think anything too crazy, and some that we've talked about, like speed cameras on your route, we talked about, I think, yesterday. So they say that this includes Apple Podcasts as a software, as a new software in the vehicle, Tesla Arcade updates, automatic 911 calls, speed cameras on route. They also note that it includes Trip Planner on the mobile app, which I kind of thought was already there, but maybe I'm just thinking of something else. More cameras in live camera view. I think we've heard that They're working on making all eight cameras viewable from that. I'm not sure if that's all eight in this one or just more, but I think it would be all eight. Automatic blind spot camera, light show updates, and a few other things here, just kind of minor shuffle play and title, you know, etc., stuff like that. So in general, quite a few new features. I don't think anything incredibly consequential, but nice to always see these types of updates. And they do say this doesn't include FSD updates. V12 still being worked on internally, hasn't expanded to additional employees at this time. And they say that apparently there is more coming with this update. Not to get your hopes up significantly. I think it's best to just keep those lower in terms of expectations, but sounds like there could also be some other things coming at some point. I think what we're all most excited about, though, is that V12 and awaiting that expansion. All right, a few other stories outside of Tesla. So Ford alerted some dealers today, according to Automotive News and a few other reports, that they are expecting the Mustang Mach-E EV credit to drop to zero on January 1st. So we've seen from Tesla, they said for the Model 3 that that's expected to be cut in half. Sounds like the Model Y will continue to get the full credit, at least for the time being. Mustang Mach-E, though, not in that situation. It sounds like that will completely be removed. As we've said, this could change. I'm sure Ford is trying to push for a reprieve from that. But for now, that is their expectation. So, you know, when you're looking at the Model Y versus the Mustang Mach-E, obviously that's going to make a difference. The volume of the Model Y, though, even if there were zero Mustang Mach-E sales, that's, you know, it's not like it's the biggest competitive set. It's not nothing, but the Model Y is competing against other vehicles, of course, as well. So a little bit disappointing there for Ford for them to potentially not have access to that credit, but it comes along with how they're building and supplying the vehicle as well. And then Stellantis, they made an update. Automotive News kind of led with the headline that Stellantis is profitable on electric vehicles in Europe and the U.S. So we can see from the beginning statement here, Stellantis is quote-unquote in the black on EVs in the U.S. and Europe, according to their CEO. But if we look at the comment from him specifically that seems to drive the first part of this article, he does say that they're trying to continuously levelize the margins between battery electric vehicles and ICE, and then said that the first thing is that we are in the black, both in the U.S. and in Europe. Our margins on electrified vehicles are in the black. Well, we know that going back a long time, electrified vehicles doesn't necessarily mean electric vehicles. That can include anything as electrified, quote-unquote, as a standard hybrid vehicle, which, you know, could have a 1 kilowatt-hour battery, and it's probably pretty easy to make a profit off of a vehicle like that with that size of a battery. So this could just be how he's phrasing it. He could mean electric vehicles. He does talk about specifically BEVs in this sort of lead-in to this other comment. But I'm not ready to make that assumption quite yet, as we've seen profitability be very challenging for other automakers, you know, with Ford's disclosure and some of the startup EV players that we have seen, of course, outside of BYD. So, you know, we'll see if we get more information on that, but just wanted to clarify that point for those that maybe had seen that headline. And then the last item for today, we've got an update from a judge which has ruled that Cruz is ordered to show cause why it should not be sanctioned by the commission. Not sure which commission, but the Public Utilities Commission of the state of California, for failing to provide complete information relating to the accident, which has caused, of course, a lot of the changes in Cruz over the last couple of months. So they're being ordered this as a part of this ruling. They do lay out sort of the timeline on what Cruz disclosed and at what point. And they say, as a summary of that, from October 3rd to October 18th, Cruz failed to provide the commission with a full account of the October 2nd incident for more than 2 weeks. So what Cruz had sort of said was that they had shared the whole video of that situation. The Public Utilities Commission and the DMV, I think, had said that they had not. And I think that debate is probably one around timing, and now we're getting a little bit more details on the timing. And it sounds like it's possible, at least from this summary, that that was withheld for possibly a couple of weeks here. So a pretty significant period of time, and makes sense then why, if this is accurate, the DMV and the Public Utilities Commission would be upset with those actions. So we'll continue to monitor this with Cruz and see where things go from here. But that'll wrap it up for today. So as always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on X @TeslaPodcast. and we'll see you tomorrow for the Thursday, December 7th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.